We really won't countenance public servants violating their duties by trafficking in narcotics.
A prison guard is arrested on drug smuggling charges. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Wednesday, May 25th. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, state funds help promote Alaska craft brewers, but should it?
I don't see why the state would want to forward fund a festival built around consumption of alcohol.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by Arctic Wire Rope and Supply, stocking rope, chain, and boat anchors from 5 to 3,000 pounds on the web at arcticwirerope.com. And by BP Alaska. As part of their commitment to Alaska, BP and their employees are investing in over 400 education and service organizations in communities across the state. More at alaska.bp.com.
A Goose Creek prison guard has been arrested in connection with an alleged conspiracy to distribute drugs in the correctional facility. As Alaska Public Media's Ellen Lockyer reports, the corrections officer faces federal charges.
The criminal complaint charges corrections officer Adam Jason Spindler with conspiracy to distribute and possession with intent to distribute heroin and marijuana. The case has been brought against Spindler with the help of the FBI, based on an affidavit provided to the Department of Justice by FBI Special Agent Richard Fuller. Karen Leffler is the U.S. District Attorney for Alaska. She says it is not unusual for the FBI to be involved in a state case and stressed the level of cooperation that it took to bring the case to light.
It's very important to federal law enforcement and working with our state partner that we really won't countenance public servants violating their duties by trafficking in narcotics.
Information provided by the Justice Department indicates that during this month, the Alaska Department of Corrections contacted the FBI on suspicions that Spindler was smuggling drugs into Goose Creek for distribution to inmates. This week, FBI surveillance observed Spindler meeting with a suspected female drug courier in Wasilla, then followed him to Goose Creek, where he has worked the night shift for the past 3 years. According to the documents, on arrival at the prison, Spindler gave what he said was a bag of personal use marijuana to a fellow corrections officer who was leaving the prison to take away from prison grounds. Spindler was detained at the prison, but a search of his person did not turn up any drugs. A state DOC canine unit detected drugs in Spindler's truck, although agents did not find any in the vehicle at the time. However, the other corrections officer, who was literally holding the bag, called Goose Creek personnel, saying he suspected the presence of heroin in the bag. Tests showed the presence of 1.6 grams of heroin and half a gram of marijuana. Spindler then admitted to FBI agents that he intended to distribute the drugs to an inmate. Spindler now faces federal drug charges. He was scheduled for an initial appearance in federal court Wednesday afternoon. An indictment will be filed in the future, according to Leffler. Dean Williams, Alaska Corrections Commissioner, says the incident has mixed significance for his department.
This is a difficult day for us on one hand, and yet it's a really fantastic day for us on the other hand. And here's why it's so difficult. One of our correction officers sort of went to the dark side.
Williams also credited the cooperation of the FBI in making the case. Williams used the occasion to announce the formation of a new professional conduct unit within the corrections department.
This really, I think, represents a new era of public trust, I hope, as well as staff trust, that when problems are brought to us, we're going to do something about it, or at least we're going to do our best to do something about it. That's the reason, quite frankly, why I stood up the professional conduct unit, first unit of its kind in this department, to really make sure that we were objectively, professionally doing internal investigations. And that unit, by the way, in conjunction with the FBI, is the reason why this case played out.
Federal attorneys are not commenting on the case against Spindler at this time, according to Leffler. Brad Wilson with the Alaska Correctional Officers Association says he's withholding comment until he learns more about the case. I'm Ellen Lockyer.
A U.S. Senate subcommittee has passed a bill that includes $1 billion to build a new polar icebreaker. Senator Lisa Murkowski on Tuesday thanked the other members of the Defense Appropriations Subcommittee for including the ship in its spending bill for next year.
With the insertion that you have made, Mr. Chairman, and to the members of the committee, of a billion-dollar commitment to an icebreaker for the United States of America, an Arctic nation, this is going to be noted around the globe.
For years, Murkowski and other lawmakers have put a few million dollars at a time toward the project in the annual Coast Guard budget. The cost of a single icebreaker would exceed that agency's entire yearly allotment for shipbuilding. The pending Senate bill would fund the whole project from a much larger pot, the Navy's budget. It's far from a done deal, though. Even if the full Senate approves the bill, the House version doesn't yet include the funding. One of Governor Bill Walker's allies overseeing the effort to build a natural gas pipeline has resigned and plans to run for state Senate. Former Fairbanks Borough Mayor Luke Hopkins, a Democrat, announced his resignation from the board of the Alaska Gasline Development Corporation today. He's expected to challenge North Pole Republican John Coghill, the Alaska Senate Majority Leader. Walker appointed Hopkins to the board last November after removing the previous chairman and another member. The move was seen as an effort to consolidate control over the agency, which is responsible for the state's share of the massive Alaska LNG pipeline project. Hopkins was narrowly confirmed by the legislature in April. He says he is resigning to avoid politicizing the gas line board during the campaign. In his resignation letter, Hopkins said he was prompted to run by a lack of leadership in Juneau, quote, whether it be balancing the budget, providing stability and certainty for our critical industries, or supporting our university, the legislature has utterly failed Alaskans, he wrote. In a statement, Walker said he would begin the process of finding a replacement soon. Anchorage's outgoing superintendent Ed Graff was chosen to lead the Minneapolis Public Schools. That district has about 12,600 fewer students than Anchorage because the Twin Cities metropolitan area is broken into more districts. About two-thirds of the nearly 36,000 students are people of color. The Anchorage School Board decided not to renew Graff's contract in October, but would not provide specific reasons as to why. He's being replaced by current MATSU Superintendent Dina Paramo. Graff will stay with ASD until the end of June. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, a new fish co-management agreement between tribes and the federal government.
I'm really excited about the MOU to work formally with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service and the Kuskokwim Intertribal Fish Commission.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by
ExxonMobil Alaska, working with more than 100 Alaska communities and thousands of Alaskans. Today, ExxonMobil is producing natural gas condensate from the Point Thompson facilities.
The Medallion Foundation and the Federal Aviation Administration provide information on passengers' rights and responsibilities. More information at faa.gov/go/flyalaska. This message is sponsored by the Medallion Foundation.
It's been almost a year since the Sockeye Fire in Willow devastated more than 7,000 acres of south-central Alaska and torched 55 homes. Fire investigators pinned the cause of the fire on two Anchorage residents, Greg Imig and Amy DeWitt, charging they had left a burning debris pile unattended on Imig's Willow property. The state is prosecuting the two, charging them with several counts, all misdemeanors. In a series of pretrial hearings starting last July and running through the early months of this year, attorneys for Imig and DeWitt have asked the court for more time for discovery. But state attorneys are getting impatient for the case to go to trial. Roman Kolachek is Palmer's district attorney.
Usually a district court case doesn't need to take a year to get to trial. So at this next pretrial conference, we're going to ask the court for a trial date and to carve out some trial time for us because this one's going to take a little bit longer than our normal misdemeanor case.
Kalachek says the case is not close to resolution and is complicated for a number of reasons because of the substantial damages involved. Many of the fire victims lost their homes entirely, and suppressing the fire cost more than $8 million, according to fire officials. Another complication, Kalachek says, is the current presiding judge in the case, who will be moving to another position, and it is uncertain which new judge will be assigned to the Sockeye case.
In my mind, if we get a trial date that's pretty certain, if there are any offers to be made by the defense or resolutions to be had, that the parties tend to get more serious if they're staring at a trial date.
Kalachek says he'd like to get the case finished by the end of this summer. He says it will take about 2 weeks for the state to present its case at trial. Another pretrial hearing is set for Friday in Palmer. Nearly 4 million gallons of beer were brewed in Alaska last year. Nationwide, craft brewing is on the rise, and Alaska is no exception. Last weekend saw the first ever tasting festival made up exclusively of small brewing and distilling companies based in Alaska. The small industry is thriving. And as Alaska Public Media's Zechariah Hughes reports, state support for the burgeoning alcohol sector doesn't sit well with everyone.
It's gray and drizzly on a downtown Anchorage street as a few hundred people roam from tent to tent, filling small tasting glasses with beer, part of the Alaska Crafted Festival.
Besides the weather, it's been good.
Brian Swanson is one of the owners of Odd Man Rush, a brew pub in Eagle River that opened in September. Like a lot of brewers, Swanson started off making beer as a side project. Now, though, he describes it as a hobby on steroids.
It's a scary thing to kind of, invest your own time and money, and, your families have to embrace it and everything else, and it's just been kind of humbling to see it happen.
It is not an easy line of work. Starting a brewing business combines the low-profit financial risk of a restaurant with a labyrinth of state and local alcohol regulations, which makes it puzzling why you've probably been hearing a lot about new breweries.
Canned microbrew market.
The Haynes Brewing Company has started pouring its Dalton Trail Pale Ale.
Grace Ridge Brewing sits on Ocean Drive near the turnoff to the Homer Spit.
On Saturday, a Huna microbrewery is opening its doors.
Locally made beer is moving from a novelty to an economic fixture in Alaska. There are about 1,400 full-time jobs connected to brewing, and that does not include the small batch of companies distilling hard alcohol. A recent report estimates the industry has a direct impact of about $84 million in Alaska, although only about a quarter of that is actually retained in state. And we know these figures because independent craft brewing as an industry has matured to the point of hiring a lobbyist.
Ryan McKinster, Executive Director, Brewers Guild of Alaska.
In the past, McKinster has been a staffer in the Juneau legislature. Now, part of his job with the Brewers Guild is providing expertise to new businesses and ensuring the small industry has a voice in regulations and policymaking. He says the Crafted Festival is a big deal because for the first time, it's an event made up solely of Alaska suppliers.
The lift on creating something like this is pretty time intensive, and actually there's a cost involved with it.
Support for the Crafted Festival came in a lot of different forms, like donated goods and volunteer hours, but also from a $200,000 appropriation from the state of Alaska to organize and pay for the festival's upfront expenses.
It's basically their event currently. We're just participants in it and sponsors of the event. I think it's very important. It's gotten us to this point. I don't think we could have done this without the state support, at least at this point.
The money is a piece of a $1.8 million economic assistance program approved by lawmakers a few years ago. The aim is long-term economic growth. Craft brewing is one of the state's few growing manufacturing sectors. And Gretchen Fowski, an officer within the Division of Economic Development, says it's a rare bright spot in Alaska's current economy.
It's something that uses local materials, adds value, and then is something that we can actually export outside of Alaska. So we're looking at it in those terms.
And the Crafted Festival, Fowski says, is an effort at cultivating that export market by raising the profile of Alaska's brewers and distillers. To do that, they signed a contract with Brilliant Media Strategies, a marketing firm, to handle the event's logistics, promotion, and public relations. The contract lays out that the cost of the event is to be refunded with ticket sales. Part of that promotional work is local advertising. Another is fostering recognition beyond Alaska, like a press tour arranged for 5 freelance writers and bloggers over the weekend, valued at $30,000.
I think national attention to the event would be a huge success for us. We want people outside of Alaska to know about the products that are being made here, one, because they're such high quality, and two, because it can ease our way into those markets and also attract people to visit Alaska and taste the products themselves.
But not everyone thinks it's a worthwhile investment.
I don't see why the state would want to forward fund a festival built around consumption of alcohol.
Jeff Jesse is the CEO of the Alaska Mental Health Trust Authority, which combats substance abuse across the state. He says while it's fine for the industry to host a celebration and try to expand its reach, he doesn't think a street festival with live bands, a cocktail contest, and 40 drink tickets per attendee does much to cultivate an export market. Nor does he think the state has any business contributing funds toward alcohol, which cost taxpayers $42 million in just prevention and treatment services across Alaska last year.
It's not a moral dilemma. It's a public health, public safety, and budgetary problem.
In years to come, the Alaska Crafted Festival is expected to be paid for solely by the Brewers and Distillers Guilds. The state's full contract with Brilliant Media Strategies is valued at about $1.1 million through 2019 if renewal options are pursued. In Anchorage, I'm Zachariah Hughes.
The Kuskokwim River Intertribal Fish Commission signed a historic Memorandum of Understanding, or MOU, with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. The agreement is the first formalization of co-management between the Alaska tribes along the Kuskokwim River and the federal government. KYUK's Charles Enoch has more.
The full Kuskokwim River Intertribal Fish Commission, made up of representatives from village tribes all along the Kuskokwim, gathered at the Cultural Center in Bethel to take part in the commission's annual meeting, including the signing of the Memorandum of Understanding. Mike Williams, Sr. of ACIAC, is the chair of the commission.
I'm really excited about the MOU to work formally with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service and the Kuskokwim Intertribal Fish Commission to make sure that our people have enough to eat and that we have enough escapement of our king salmon and salmon upriver.
Partners in the MOU include the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, the Alaska Department of Fish and Game, the Association of Village Council Presidents, and the Tanana Chiefs Conference. The commission was formed last May following an initiative presented by Deputy Secretary of the Department of Interior, Mike Connor, at the 2014 Alaska Federation of Natives Convention. Connor's initiative calls for federal managers to integrate tribes into the management of Kuskokwim salmon fisheries in federal waters. The MOU is the first part of a two-part project called the Partnership Project. The second part of the project is the creation of a detailed management framework. The commission has brought forward a proposal to be discussed by the commission, the Kuskokwim River Salmon Management Working Group, the Alaska State Office of Subsistence Management, and the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. According to the MOU, the Yukon Delta Wildlife Refuge Manager based at the refuge headquarters in Bethel will consult with the commission before making management decisions for the Kuskokwim salmon fishery in federally managed waters. Commission member Gregor Zitschka said they will try to integrate state managers into the plan.
And they have not developed the management plan yet. They have said they want to have a blended management, and they came out with the idea that their blended management would say that they'll limit it to federally qualified users and let the state manage all the openings and closings, which the state does not have the option for, call what some people might say is an allocation or to the harvest shares that we're trying to get equitably amongst people. The federal does.
The commission expects to hear back from federal managers on their proposal by Wednesday this week. In Bethel, I'm Charles Enoch.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by ConocoPhillips, investing in oil and gas production and creating economic opportunities for Alaskans. ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company.
Boating accidents happen even to experienced boaters and even on calm, sunny days. This boating season, make your friends and loved ones promise to always wear a life jacket and carry emergency communication and distress signaling devices. Visit pledgetolive.org, where you can file a float plan, get marine weather forecasts, and download a pre-departure checklist. This message sponsored by the Alaska Office of Boating Safety.
The In order to make a downtown Anchorage park safer, officials will destroy a decades-old fountain. It's one of several measures Mayor Ethan Berkowitz introduced during an outdoor press conference in Town Square Park today.
We're going to dismantle this fountain, make sure that the space in Town Square is visual so people can see across the entire square and feel safe, and this won't be used as a hiding spot any further.
The park is a fixture of downtown, but has attracted waves of complaints from business owners and residents over a perceived lack of safety. Since coming into office, the Berkowitz administration has tried to find a way to combat widespread drinking, drug abuse, and camping in the park while respecting people's civil rights in the public space. Now the administration and its partners are trying a three-part strategy. In addition to dismantling the fountain within the next 2 weeks, the city will add more police patrols around the clock. The plan also involves groups like the Anchorage Downtown Partnership and the Community Development Authority in an effort to increase activities and services designed to draw more, quote, good activity into the area.
If you have the right kind of built space, it can enhance public safety, and that's what we're going to do here.
The unifying idea is to make illicit activities harder to get away with, dispersing it, according to the administration. Pressed on whether this approach will just shift illegal and nuisance activity elsewhere downtown, Berkowitz responded the administration is pursuing larger strategies for connecting individuals who need them with resources and housing. The fountain removal and minor landscaping adjustments are not expected to incur any significant costs. The Anchorage Assembly approved a pay increase for a small group of public safety employees during its meeting last night. City officials say it's a necessary change to fix a staffing problem that's grown dire in recent years. The measure raises pay for fire and police department personnel who are switching from union jobs to non-union management positions. In total, the administration estimates there are about 30 positions split evenly between the police and fire departments. Some of the raises are modest. Others amount to tens of thousands more in base pay. Pay for management jobs has not kept up with the compensation rates negotiated in collective bargaining agreements, meaning lower-ranking personnel take a substantial pay cut if they advance upward. It's a situation South Anchorage Assemblymember Bill Evans compared to deferred maintenance.
So we got to the point over time where now the people that are being supervised are making more than the people doing the supervision.
City Manager Mike Abbott says the impetus for bringing forward the policy change came when the police department failed to get a single internal candidate when recruiting for an open lieutenant position. And the worry, Abbott says, is a large number of similar vacancies in the near future.
We're not confident that we can attract internal candidates to those positions.
Abbott says the $840,000 annual cost is to be absorbed by the police and fire departments, amounting to a zero change to the city's overall budget. The measure passed 8-3. In rural Alaska, access to emergency medical care relies on many factors: distance, weather, and time of day, to name a few. For one 10-year-old girl in Eek, emergency care also relied on one pilot's goodwill after a traumatic bike accident. KYUK's Anna Rose MacArthur talked with the girl's mother and the pilot who helped them out.
She crashed. I don't know how she crashed, but all her body weight went on her bike handle, and the handlebar went through her stomach and went all the way in, but it didn't rupture anything.
That's Kimberly Hoffman, the child's mother.
So I'm a health aide in Eek, and I'm the only one there. The first thing I did was I called a doctor, and I told him what was going on. I gave them her vitals, and I sent her a picture to the doctor. I was panicking, so I called my former coworker. She came right away, and she helped me, and the medevac wasn't going to pick her up, so I quickly called a charter around 8:30. Despite how late it was, I decided to give it a chance.
I was coming into work to paint one of our aircraft after hours, after everybody was gone.
That's Jerry White, director of maintenance and a pilot at Renfro's Alaskan Adventures in Bethel.
I answered the phone, and she explained to me the situation. And I could hear her daughter crying in the background. And at that point, I knew I needed to go.
So he said that he would pick us up in 45 minutes.
I remembered we went and picked up a kid out of Queethluck, the company did, earlier in the year, and he had a broken arm. He had stayed in the village all night. And I just, tore me up. I couldn't think of knowing I got this phone call, letting a kid, even if it's just something non-life-threatening, not getting the medical attention they need and having to suffer all night till a charter company can come, 8, 9, 10 o'clock the next morning, if the weather is good. So weather was good, and I had access to an airplane, licensed pilot. I thought there was no reason why I can't go. So I went.
So we quickly got you wrapped up and slowly went to the airport, and he carried her onto his plane because she couldn't walk.
So we loaded her up, got everybody situated and secured, and I immediately got ready to take off again after doing a very brief walk around to make sure the plane was okay. Just a little four-seat airplane.
When we got to Bethel, he carried her out again into my sister-in-law's car, and we went to the hospital. And that's when we found out the bicandle went all the way through, but it didn't rupture anything.
At this point, Kimberly and her daughter are flown to Anchorage for further treatment.
They went in with a scope, and they looked to see if any organs were hit. And then they took her appendix out because they were already in there. Because if she started having pain, they didn't want to risk having her appendix being infected or anything. So they did a pretty massive surgery on her.
And how's your daughter doing?
She's doing good. We have a recheck, and hopefully we head back home on Wednesday.
KYUK discovered the story when Kimberly contacted the station to send a public thank you to Jerry, the pilot, and Berna Henry, Eek's former health aide. The accident occurred Thursday, May 19th. Kimberly and her daughter are returning to Eek today. Jerry didn't charge Kimberly for the ride and says he's just glad he could help. Berna couldn't be reached for this story. In Bethel, I'm Anna Rose MacArthur.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. Tonight's stories can be found at our website, alaskapublic.org. You can like us on Facebook at Alaska Public Media and follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Ellen Lockyer, Ann Hillman, and Zachariah Hughes in Anchorage, Rachel Waldholtz in Juneau, Liz Ruskin in Washington, D.C., Anna Rose MacArthur, and Charles Enoch in Bethel. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. Wesley Early is our web editor, and I'm Lori Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible in part by your local public radio station. The outside view of the Arctic is a place of mythic proportions, fantastical, romantic, and mysterious. Contemporary artists break open the mythical idea of the Arctic in the Anchorage Museum exhibition, A View from Up Here, The Arctic at the Center of the World. Take a revealing look at the Arctic as a place of adaptation, complex landscapes, and diverse people. See The View from Up Here at the Anchorage Museum, open daily 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. This message sponsored by the Anchorage Museum.
What can a tiny piece of dust do to you? It can stop you in your tracks. Studies show exposure to dust pollution can cause tightness in your chest, wheezing, and shortness of breath, even if you're healthy. When you're on an unpaved road, drive slowly, especially when operating an ATV. When hauling dirt, cover it up. Do your part, avoid dust, and clear the air. We'll all breathe easier. This message sponsored by Alaska Department of Environmental Conservation.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.